Okay, we start here at the bottom of Kuf Lamed Bet, Amud Bet, about 11 lines up. Amar Rabba Barchan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Asur Lechol Mi Behenema, Shlo Hormu, or Horma Matnoteha. It's Asur to consume or to eat an animal that hasn't had the Matnot Kuna taken off of it, the Zerua Lechaim in the Keba, the equivalent of what would be Tevil when it comes to grains. Amar Rabba Barchan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, And here we have it stated more explicitly that the matanot, kuna, that are left inside of this behema, if you separate them out, they have a din of chulin. Same way that Maiser Rishon has that din, or same way that Maiser Ani. When they're still a part of the grain, they create a problem of tevel. When you take them out, they can be eaten even by a zar. They have no inherent kedusha to them, but they need to be removed in order to take away the shame tevel. The same thing over here. By the matnot of the zroa, the chaim and the keba, if you don't remove them, then the shame tevel is on the animal. It says, ilu achal tevelim. Now the Gemara concludes, v'lei tilchato kavate. The locha is not like this statement of Rabbi Barchanon, which does have major menafkaminot in terms of the halacha of not taking out the matnot kahuna. First thing to note is that there's a tosvot back on Kuf Lamed Aleph on Friday's daf, that says that he thinks that it's possible that there's an isur involved. He says, even though the halacha is over here in our Gemara that says, the late hilchato kavatid Rabbi Barchana, avim melkom akom isura ika lechom bibeima shlohurma matnotea. There's still a residual isur that exists there, even though the Gemara here concludes that the halacha is not like Rabbi Barchana, so it won't have a din of tevel, but Tosafot believes that there's still an isur.
Isn't this? Gemara says that the halacha is not like it.
Correct. That's what it sounds like from the Gemara. Tosfot rejects that understanding and says, yes, there is no din of Tevel and the Isur associated with Tevel, but miho Isur Iko. There is some sort of Isur that's not the Isur of Tevel. And because of that, it creates a problem today in the modern day. Most of the poskim, most of the Rishonim do not agree with Tosafot in this area. They say, that the halakha is not like this. But it does have nafkaminot for us today. But we have behemot that are nishchatu, and when they are nishchatu, you have a problem that you don't have the matnot taken off in many of the organizations where they remove, many of the kashrut organizations. It's not clear what exactly happens. Now, truthfully, just to separate them out, there are two issues. One issue is just taking off the matnot. So that, a little, some of them are better at than others, but at least if you designate them already, then you can get rid of this shame isur for Tosafot and for others. There's a secondary issue, which is that it really belongs to the Kohen. And even though we can say, Amotzi Mechaveru Alav Araya, and we can demand that the Kohen, if he wants to come, he has to prove to us that he's a Kohen, he's entitled to it. Nevertheless, let's say L'day Shamayim, for a person to say that it's his, and not the Kohen's, that's a very difficult statement. You're better off, let's say, the Devi Shemaim giving it to a Kohen than you are holding on to it. Problem, it's Hulin. So it's less of an issue, like Truma or Trumat Maser. Correct. Yeah, even if he's a Zah, you don't lose if he takes it. So therefore, there are Shalach houses where they do give the Matnot to the Kohanim. More likely, and most of them do, is the solution of paying money. They give a remuneration in place of the matnot kuhuna, or they come into an agreement with the kohanim as to how much they'll get per animal or per matanot, they'll give them. One of the suggestions that's made by a lot of the poskim is what's called nichui halva'a, that you actually lend the money to the kohen, or you lend money to a levi, and then as you get the number of matnot kuhuna, you start to reduce that value in the loan that they owe back. So you use this as a defeasance method for the loan by giving them a set of money, and then you slowly, they defease it by the number of animals that are shechted over the year.
But the bottom line is you're giving them money.
Correct, they're getting it. It's just a way to do it without having to pay every single time that there's an animal. It's a way to do it without creating difficulties every time. But unfortunately, many places that do not handle it this way. Right, so that's the other way to deal with it, is to bring in a goy be'emsa, or kohanim be'emsa, is bring in a partnership. So you have that. The other ways to deal with it are either to bring a goy or a kohen in as a partner in order to eliminate that problem. So I just saw an article in the Machon Latar Vaharetz that he said that he went around to all the shecht houses and it wasn't so simple, that it didn't really, some of them were not doing anything to deal with it, and that it's not so clear. This halacha has come to the forefront. Although there have been arguments over time in many of the shutim, be aware of that there are arguments about whether you really have to still pay the matnot kuna, both from a standpoint of, one, do you have to give the matnot themselves and not pay money? Why not do it? Second one is, but do you have to pay money at all? There were some that said, again, like the Chazon Ish argued about this, the motzi mechaver al avaraya, that may not have to give it at all, that the obligation doesn't devolve upon you then, it's on the one who makes the claim, but most disagree with that, and you have a lot of tshuvot written in the times of the settlement of Eretz Yisrael that demand that they give the matnot kuhuna and the Maisa Rishon to the Levi, all of these things that be done properly and given properly, since they don't involve an Yisur Chiv Mito or problem of Zar, that there's no reason that we should assume just because they don't have Yichus of a Kohen or Yichus of a Levi, meaning Mesora, Biyad Kol Echad, that Cheskat Kuhuna and Cheskat Leviya should be enough in this case to give it. Chazon Ish's claim is that the Gemara demands, in general, for someone to be classified as a Levi or a Kohen, Edut. Someone has to testify that they are a Kohen or a Levi. Just because they get an Aliyah, just because they say they're a Levi or a Kohen, doesn't designate them. So therefore, the tour comes from this fact that we don't have people testifying or giving Edut to the fact that these people are Kohanim or Leviim. And therefore, they're not designated. They don't reach that designation of Kohen and Levi, even Mipnei Chazaka. That's the tour of the Chazon Ish. But it is definitely an issue at the forefront today that has to be dealt with. Right, so that is, and some of the Shutim that talk about this say that just because the butcher stole it, doesn't mean that you don't have a din, let's say, the Dei Shemayim, to give it to the Kohen. Technically, which is the din of Rav Chisda, generally that shouldn't be a problem. Although there were others that wanted to be kones, the people that they shouldn't buy the animals unless the matnot were given, in order to force the hand of the butchers, to pressure the butchers on it. There were that did that, but I'll tell you the main problem, which is going to come up in today's Gemara, is tongue. Tongue is one of the matnot. It comes with the cheeks. The lechaim, the tongue is included. So the tongue is one of the major, otherwise most of the stuff's not eaten. I mean, they, in terms of the keba, that's not really so actively eaten or taken. Kishka, most people don't use real kishkas now, in terms of wrapping it up. And the other thing is the zroa, so that could be something that has the meat, but that's not, in terms of percentage or meat in there, the tongue is something that's really sold separately and sold as an independent item, and that's something that can present a problem here. Alright, so now, I'm Rav Chisda. Matnot kiuna ine cholot elitzli. If you have the matnot kiuna, they have to be eaten roasted. You have to eat them with mustard. My time, what's the reason here? Amakra, the mashcha, ligdula. When it comes to the Kohanim, they have to do it. The mashcha, the Gemara Darshan's here means like, those are that are nimshachim. Who's nimshach? The melech, the king. So it should be like a princely eating. It should be something that is like in the king's chambers. So they have to eat it in such a way. Kederach shemelachim, ochlim, the way the kings eat. Now, we don't pask in this way. Halacha is not like this statement of the Gemara, but rather that they can eat it any way they want. The Kohanim can eat it as they please, but this is still something that has... Exactly. Right, the other Mishonim, like the Ritva and the Ramban, mentioned the Mashcho is not the Gdula, but the Mashcho means if you want to be a king, you can eat it any way you want. And that's the halacha, that you can eat it any way you want. V'amar Rav Chisda, 24 matanot kuna, kol kohen sheinu baki behem, eitni lo matana. The 24 matnot kuna, if the kohanim are not b'ki'im in them, they don't know what they're entitled to, what exactly they get, how to deal with them, we don't give them to them. V'lav milti, and that's not true. The Tanya, I have a bright, the Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol kohen sheinu modeh ba'avuda, in lo chelek b'kuna. Kohen who does not admit or understand that the avoda belongs to him and that he's a participant in the avoda, for whatever reason that he's rejecting the avoda, then he's not entitled to any chelke kuna. Shenemar, hamakriv et dama shelamim, v'techilev mivnei aron, lo tiyeh shoki yamin lemana. The person who brings the dama shelim, who makriv the dama shelamim and the chelev, they are entitled to the shoki yamin lemana. That indicates that the one who's doing the avoda is the one who's entitled to it. But it's not only the one who's doing the avoda, but it's someone who agrees to that, or someone who is a participant in that part of the avoda, therefore they're entitled. In the Elizabeth Bilvad. That's only this. Damashlamim and the Chelev. Minayin Rabot Chameshisri Avodot. How do I know to include all the other Chameshisri Avodot where only a Kohen is Kasher, Kigon, Hayitzikot. Now the first series of things are for the Mincha. All things that are done by Mincha. Yitzika is the pouring of the Shemen on top of the Mincha. Blila is the mixing of the Shemen within the Mincha. As Rashi points out, Kulan Tzrichim Shlosha Matanot Shemen. This is Rashi Lishitato, that all of the Menachot require 3 Matanot Shemen. That means a Matanat Kli. You put Shemen in the Kli first, Then you put in the flour, and you put in shemen again to be bolel, to mix it, and then you have yitzikah afterwards. Now, there are those, the Rambam and others, that disagree that not all of them have this three, but at least in terms of yitzikah and blila, we know that those are matnot shemen that have to be done by a kohen in the mincha, hapetzitot. After they are baked, they have to be folded up. Like this in the Mishnayot, in Minachot, at Mar Minachot, fold them up into smaller pieces, and then they do kumitza out of that, after the petita. Hamelichot, putting melach on. And melach, or melach timlach is true of all karbanot, or anything that's mukrav al mizbeach has melach on it, but it's also true in the process of the mincha, that you have to salt the komets before you put it on the mizbeach. Tnufot, vagashot. Tnufa are the wave offerings. They have to be done by the menachot, not all of them, but majority of them require tnufa. And hagasha, taking the mincha and touching it to the southwestern corner of the mizbeach. All of these have to be done by a kohen. Vakmitzot, taking the komets off of the mincha. Vaktarot, and doing the aktarata komets on the mizbeach. So these eight that we just mentioned are all in the process of the mincha, but they all demand kohen in order to be done. Vamilikot, milika of a bird that is brought, the olat or chatata of that are brought, need to have milika, but milika must be done by kohen. The obvious thing that's missing over here is shchita, because shchita is kashera bezar. You don't require a kohen in order to do shchita. Kabbalot, the kabbalat adam. Hazaot, this is the sprinkling of the dam. So there, as Rashi points out, that can be zrikat adam, whether that's on the mizbeach, whether it's on the parochet bifnim, in the kodesh hakodeshim, mizbeach zahav, all matanot dam, hashkat sota, giving the sota to drink, the liquid, varifat eglarufa. Doing eglarufa must be performed by the kohanim, that's what's demanded in the parsha. Vetarat mitzora, the two birds that the mitzora brings in order to be tahor, and the sprinkling of the dam, is in the end, that must be done by the kohen. And siyat kapayim, ben bifnim, ben bachutz, duchanim, whether it's done in the mikdash or done in the Beit Knesset, all of that has to be done by the kohen. All of these items, if he participates, then he's entitled to the matanot kuna. If he doesn't participate, then he's not entitled. Talmud Lomar, how do I know that? I know it at the pasuk. It says, mibnei Aaron. It's bnei Aaron. Anything that has to do with bnei Aaron that demands kuhuna, that's when you're entitled to the shok hayamin lemanet. Then you're entitled to the matnot kuna. If you don't admit to the avoda, you don't participate in the avoda, you're not entitled. Kol kohen she'inu modeh ba in lo chalek b'kuhuna. Any kohen that's not admitting, I don't think admitting here, but doesn't participate, doesn't believe in the avoda, doesn't believe that he has any shachut to the avoda, then he doesn't have a chelik in the kuna, and he doesn't have a chelik in the matnot. Taima, deino modeba. Its point is that that's what disqualifies him. Ha modeba, apagav deino bakiben, as long as he admits that he has relevance to it, he participates in it, he knows that these are important items for a kohen to do, even though he's not a baki, he's still entitled. So that goes against this position that was stated by Rav Chisda, that the kohen is not entitled in this case. Amar Rav Ava, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Chutin Shibalechi, the veins in the cheeks, Asurin, their problem of dam, they need to be taken out in order to remove the dam. Chol kohen she'eno yodeh litlan, if a kohen doesn't know how to take him out, eno lino matana, don't give it to him, because it's lifnei iver, lo titen mechsho, you're going to cause him to eat blood, because he doesn't know how to take out the chutim, and you give him the cheeks. So don't give it to a kohen unless he knows how to take out, do the nikur to take out these veins. Velohi, and that's not true, because there's other ways to deal with blood, like we deal in all the other cases. Ibitavyo, if you roast it, midab daive, then it runs out, the blood flows out. And this is true even in the hardest cases, like the liver, where there's so much blood that the normal process of kashering doesn't work. Nevertheless, roasting, putting it on an open fire is enough to draw the blood out and get rid of the blood. So to here, if he roasts the cheeks, that'll get rid of the blood. V'ilik deiro, if he's going to put it in a pot, I mean the normal cooking of meat, idem michtach luhu, if he cuts it open, if he slices them open, amalach luhu, and then he salts them, midav daivi, that's enough to draw the blood out. As long as you slice the meat open so that the blood is not encapsulated or caught inside, if you cut it into pieces, that opens up the areas where the blood or the veins are found, and you put salt on it, maybe a little extra salt, that'll get rid of the blood, that'll draw it out. So there's no issue here in terms of getting rid of the blood, because you don't have to strip the veins out. You can do it by the normal processes of a kashering, and that everybody knows how to do. I mean, not us, but in their day, anybody who ate meat knew how to kasher in this way, and therefore, it's not a problem to give it to the kohen in that case. All right, now, Amar Rova. Now here there's a machlokas in the girsa here. It's going to be a number of machlokot in the girsa. I'm going down the Gemara here between Rova and Rabba. It really relates to a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Gemara Rosh Hashanah in Daf Yud Chet Amud Aleph. There, the Gemara brings down a story about the Baye, and then there's a question if it's about Rova or Rabba. Over there it says that they were Mibnei Eli HaKohen, that they were Kohanim, And they were descendants of Eli HaKohen, and they lived shorter lives than should have been. There the Gemara discusses one lived till 40, one lived till 60. And the Gemara talks about the fact that Tefillah and Torah and Gemilat Chasadim can overcome the Gzeira of Bnei Eli that they shouldn't pass the year of age of 20. So Abaye for sure is a descendant. There's a machloket in the Rishonim, in the Girsa, in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, whether it's Rava or Rabba.
That is related in any close way?
Rabba was the stepfather or the adopted father of Abaye. Either way, the problem is that the machloket Rishonim about who is the Kohen, Rava or Rabba, will relate to this Gemara as well. Who is the Kohen that we're speaking about here? So you see the Gemara has Rava, but you can see the Bach right away changes it to Rabba, depending on who you think. Here in this part of the Gemara, it's who's the Kohen. See later on the Gemara, it's who's not the Kohen. But right now we're talking about who's the Kohen. So it's either Rava or Rabba. Bodok line Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef tested us. Haikano de chotif matnata. The Kohen that goes and grabs his matanot, I mean, he goes and swipes them right away. Chavuve kamechavim mitzvah. Is that a sign that he loves the mitzvah of matnot kuhuna and he's going out and he's being zealous about getting his mitzvot? Or zuzule kamzalzul b'mitzvah. Is that a zilzul that he goes and he snatches it away? And is that something that's inappropriate in the behavior? Upashtanale. We answer him from the pasuk. The pasuk by Perek Yutchet and Dvarim in the parsha of the matnot kuhuna by Kamsa Zerua Lechaim and the keba. Over there it says, v'natan. Well, v'natan means that they, balim, give it to you, not that you take it. V'lo, she told me atzmo, not that you take it on your own. So the answer to the question is, don't be grabbing the matnot kihuna. Rather that they have to give it to you, the balabatim have to give it to you. So Amar Abaye, Abaye says, now here we have Abaye who's clearly a Kohen here. He says, Mirei shavachatifna matnato. In the beginning, I used to go and snatch away the matanot. I'm showing my chivivut for the mitzvah. I want to act as a kohen who eats and takes the matanot kuna with the zealousness. So I did it in that way. Came into Shemana Laha. After I heard this memra from Rav Yosef and this interaction, Natan, Veloshi Ito, this drasha that you about to have to give it, not that I take it, Me'atzmo, Michtaf lo chavtivna. I backed off a little bit, I stopped snatching it. Meymar, Amrei Havali. But I still said, give it to me. I still requested it. I didn't go and take it actively, but I did request that they give it to me. Came in the Shemana Laha, but then I heard another memra, Detanya, of a bright Yitu Acharei Abatza. So it says about the children of Shmuel, that they went after the Batza, they went after graft, corruption, bribery, but that can't be. It's the children of Shmuel. You can't take that literally. So the drash for Rabbi Meir Omer, Bnei Shmuel, Kokam Shalu Bifihim. They were Levi'im. Shmuel is a Levi. Therefore, his children are obviously Levi'im. And they went to ask for their matnot Levi'ah, B'peh. They demanded their matnot Levi'ah. They didn't take them, but they said, please give us our matnot Levi'ah. And here, you see from that statement that the Navi, or obviously the way Rabbi Meir is learning it, looks unfavorably upon the fact that they asked for their matanot Levi'ah. It says, Vayitu Acharei Abatza, causes graft, corruption, bribery, that was inappropriate. So after I heard that, Abaye says, Meimar lo, nami lo amino. I didn't ask for it actively. So he gave up taking them, snatching them, he gave up asking for them. V'yayvli shakilna. And if they gave them to me, I would take it. So I didn't actively ask for it, but if they gave it, I was willing to accept it. Came in the Shemana Laha, but then I got a hold of another memra, and that changed my behavior again to Tanya. We have a brayta. This is after the death of Shimon HaTzadik. Hatzkumim moshkim et yedehem, vargarganim chokim. So that, when it came to the Lechem HaPanim, the division of Lechem HaPanim, there was no longer bracha mitzuya bapat. There was no longer that bracha that had come from the time of Shimon HaTzadik. Therefore, the Tzkumim moshkim et yedehem, they refused, or they said, I'm not participating in the Lechem HaPanim, I'm not going to eat from it anymore. And the gluttons went ahead and they split it up amongst themselves and they went ahead and gobbled it down. Because of that, Mishkal Nami Lo Shekilna, I said, you know what, that's enough, I'm not even going to accept the matnot kuna anymore. Exception to that is, Levar, Himale Yom Kippurim, an Erev Yom Kippur. An Erev Yom Kippur, as Rashi points out, it's a Yom Tov. It's a day that there's a mitzvah to eat. But on top of that, because there's a mitzvah eat and they're marbin besuda, there was a large number of shkitot that needed to be eaten immediately. Because as opposed to in other days where you have that day and you can eat afterwards the meat that you shechted, remember there's no refrigeration, so you're eating fresh meat, you gotta consume it within that period of time. If you have that day, the next day, you can, you know, eat it over a period of time, you can distribute it. But here, when Mali Erev Yom Kippur, this is Erev Yom Kippur, that night, the next day, nobody can eat. So you've lost a lot of the time frame in which you could consume the meat. So there was a large number of behemoth shechted, and a lot of meat that had to be consumed on that day. So there were a lot of matnot kuhuna being given out, and all the kohanim would show up to get their matnot kuhuna. Abai felt, if he didn't show up on that day, then people would assume that he wasn't a kohen. I mean, that would have already taken him out. That would, he would lose his chazokah as a kohen. So he says, lachzuke nafshai b'kanai. So he says that I wanted to make sure that I had a chazok as a kohen. If I didn't show up in the day when all the kohenim show up, it would make it look like I'm not. V'lifros yadei, let him dochen. Let him go up to the dochen and dochen. Then everybody know he's a kohen. It's an interesting answer. And say, le idane, or idane, his talmidim, he was teaching shir, and many times he didn't have the opportunity to dochen. So dochening wasn't something that he did all the time, or he's able to get to very often, and therefore that would not be an indication of his kohenah, because he just didn't do it often enough. He shows up, and you see him always duchening, then you would know he's a kohen. But that wasn't happening, so therefore he made sure to go out on Erev Yom HaKippurim to participate in the taking of the matnot kuhuna, so everybody would know he is a kohen, even though generally he did not accept the matnot kuhuna because of this problem.
With his talmidim, so even though he did duchen
there, it wasn't widely known. Right, so that's the Gemara. The Gemara in the Brachot speaks about the benefits of davening where one learns. That there's a mila to davening in a Beis Medrash over a Beit Knesset. Mara there talks about Amoraim who, despite the fact that there were 13 Beit Knesset in Matamachsio or whatever the city was, that these Amoraim would daven by next to their pillars. I mean, next to the place where they learned Torah. Despite the fact there was Rav Amadra Melech and other ma'alot going to these other Batei Knesiot, nevertheless they davened in the Beit Midrash. So what you're suggesting again is that Abayi davened with his students, so because that's where he taught and that's where he learned. And therefore, he only duchened in a small crowd, and then nobody would know about it except for his students, and therefore he wanted to be widely known that he was a Kohen, so he went out to the masses to take his matnot kuhuna on Erev Yom HaKippurim. Now what is interesting here, and this is discussed in the Minchat Chinuch, we discussed this in Zvachim and Menachot and other contexts, whether there's a mitzvah for Kohanim to eat from the Kodoshim or not. Is the obligation on the Shevet to consume the Kodoshim, or is there a mitzvah on each individual Kohen to eat the Kodashim? One of the mikorot that sits prominently in this is this, exactly this, braita from Yoma, which is a tznuim moshchim et yedeim, that tznuim stop to eat. Well, if there's a mitzvah that devolves upon each kohen, then how could it be that tznuim pulled out and stopped eating? Then they're foregoing the mitzvah of eating the kodashim that is devolves upon the kohenim. So many of the rishonim answer to deflect the problem and say that even though there's a mitzvah on every individual kohen, that over here what ended up happening was that they were getting less than a kazayit because of the garganim, and therefore there was no mitzvah for them anyway. They weren't being mekayim in mitzvah, therefore they didn't do it. But Minchat Chinuch, in his discussion, this scenario plays prominently because of this problem of whether it's there's an obligation on the individual kohen or on the multiple kohenim. Just mentioning it here, we did the sugya more in depth in Tzvachim and in Menachot, but just to note it over here. Amar Rav Yosef, Haikana di'itlei tzurba midarabonam b'shivutei. This coin that has a young whippersnapper, Talmud Chacham, in his neighborhood, but he's very poor. He's unable to support himself. Qualification generally is that he doesn't have a steady stream of income. Lizkele matnato. He should be mizakeh him, the matnot kuhuna. The matnot kuhuna over here are chulin. The ezarim can participate them in. The coin has it. The coin should give him a portion of it as tzedakah. He can basically give it to him. Now the more important part is af agav dolo atel yodeh. Even though it didn't come into his hand, this is an important scenario, what we discussed in the beginning of this year, about what they do today about this, which is that there is a problem with in terms of the matnot. The matnot have to be given to a specific kohen or to a specific levi. It can't be just that you say, oh, here, I give it to the kohanim or the shevet gets it. It has to be given to a specific kohen or levi, and it has to come into his possession before the kohen has rights to it. Kohen has no rights over the matnot until they come into his hand. The exception to this rule is what's called makirei kuhuna v'leviyah. Makirei kuhuna v'leviyah, or kohanim or levi'im, who on a regular basis get the matnot. And therefore, the question of how it works, but let's assume like Rashi says, other kohanim are miyayish from it. Other kohanim and levi'im have yeyush over it because they know that this individual always gives it to this particular kohen, or always gives it to this particular levi. Or for instance, if there's a very prominent kohen, prominent Levi in town, and everybody gives them their matnot. So then all the other Kohanim and Levim are mayayesh from getting possession over that. So because of that, the Kohen takes possession of the matnot, even if it doesn't come into his hand, even if he doesn't have a kinyan on it. So that's what we're talking about here. Even though he doesn't have a kinyan on it, how could he give it over to the Talmud Chacham without having a kinyan on it? It's not his to give to the Talmud Chacham. It belongs to the Shevet. So how does he do that? That's his case of Makirei Kuna Vilibiya, where they know they always give it to a particular Kohen, or always give it to a particular Levi, all the other Kohenim give up on it. Miyayish, that's the way Rashi expresses it. And therefore there's a Kinyan to that Kohen that he can give it over. There's a Kinyan, effective Kinyan, even though there was no Kinyan here, because the assumption is it's going to him. And therefore he can pass it on to this Talmud Chacham without ever coming into possession of it. And again, today, in the modern day, that works again with the, when we're talking about the Shecht houses, that when they have to get rid of the Matnot Kuna, that they use this concept of Makirei Kuna Leviya, that they direct it towards one Kohen and Levi, therefore they can do it without actually having the Kohen come and make a Kinyan on all the Matanot. They can sell them it, they can be deduct the fees, the loans, whatever they do, the method that they use, they don't need the Kohen in there making a Kinyan every time, they have the Matnot Kuna in there. Alright. Rava v'Rav Safra. So now this problem of the Girsa comes up here. You see here that the Bach doesn't change the Girsa, that it's Rava and Rav Safra, it's Rava the non-Kohen over here. Rashi, look in Rashi right down, Bavo on the first wide line of Rashi, he says, Vapa gav de Rava, nami Kohen hava. Even though Rava was a Kohen. Rashi says the stories about Rava, and Rava is a Kohen. Meaning that Rashi's Girsa, according to this, is, in Rosh Hashanah, would be that Rava is the Kohen, not Rabba is the Kohen. Although, if you look here, you can see the Gilead Hashas from Akiva Eger. Akiva Eger says, if you look in Rashi, in Rosh Hashanah, Rashi says, Behipuch. He says just the opposite. That Rava is not a Kohen, versus what he says here, that Rava is the Kohen. It is a possibility, but the story there is only about one. So the question is, who's that story about in Rosh Hashanah? And you'll see here that the story makes a lot more sense. If Rava, whoever the alternative one is not a Kohen. And that's for this story. Rav of Rav Safra, Iklu Lebei Mar Yochanan, Brei de Rav Chana Bar Ado. They went to the house of Mar Yochanan, the son of Rav Chana Bar Ado, Vamila, Lebei Mar Yochanan, Brei de Rav Chana Bar Bizna. Question of whose son he was. Avilu Egla Tilta. Made for them the Egla Tilta. This week's Parsha. Egla Tilta is Rashi brings them down. One is that either it's the third one born to its mother, or Egla Tilta means an eagle
that it reached one third of its maturation.
Amarle Rava Lishame. Listen to what Rava does. Rava says to the servant of Mar Yochanan, Zachilan Matnato. You should be Mizaki to us. The Matnot Kuna. The Be'ina L'mecha Lishna V'chaldula. I want to eat the tongue, mustard in mustard. So this was a delicacy. So now the Shamei, the servant who was working there, the butler of Mar Yochanan, was a Kohen. And so what Rava says to him is, you, the Kohen, be mezaket to us the Matnot Kuna. Now this is Makirei Kuna because the Balabait, Mar Yochanan, always gave his Matnot to his butler, the Kohen. So he had the rights to these Matnot. And Rava asks from him, please give over these matnot to us, because I want to eat the tongue. You see a couple of things from this. Number one is, as Rashi points out, Mibnei Shalashoni Melachaim Nitan LeKohanim. One of the matnot kuna that comes with the cheeks is the Lashon, the tongue. Tongue is one of those matnot kuna. So Rava couldn't just eat it. He needed the Kohen to give it over to him. Number two is, it sounds like from here that Rava himself couldn't take it because he wasn't a Kohen. So that would work well with the change of the Girsa above that says Rabba is the Kohen and Rava is not the Kohen. But Rashi writes, as we saw before, V'afagav de Rava nami Kohen ava. Even though Rava was a Kohen, to Kaimelan de B'nei Eli ato, v'chorot nami Rina Rava ava mevato chumat chutz la'aretz barov, v'achale b'mei chumato, miu, minafshei lo matzi shakyo, dikhtei v'natan v'lo shito mi atzmo. He says that, they had the problem that you're, as a Kohen, not allowed to take the matanot. The Balabait has to give it to you. So what does he say? He says that, says the other Kohen, who, you take it, right, and then you give it to me. So you give it to me. I'm a Kohen and you give it to me. So therefore, he didn't want to, you can't ask for it directly from there. So he said to this Kohen, he says, I know you're the Makirei Kuna, you always get it. So once you get it, give it to me. Or because you're Zoche in it, then you can give it to me. So he didn't ask it directly from the Balabait. It went through this Kohen, the butler. That's the way Rashi explains it. Obviously, easier way to read the Gemara is the Rava's not a Kohen. And that's why he needed the butler to intervene as a Kohen in between. And as Rashi points out here, Ba'afagav de lomato yode, even though this butler Kohen never took possession of it, he's being somech on Rav Yosef that says by Makirei Kuna that it's enough, that you don't have to actually come into your possession, it's enough to pass it on. Then, story continues, very interesting story. So Rava achal, Rava ate the tongue, Rav Safra lo achal, Safra refused to eat from this tongue. Akuya la Rav Safra bechalma. In Rav Safra, he gets a pasuk in his dream. Meaning that there's some sort of form of nevuah, ruach hakodesh that comes to him and says, Made beged biyom kara, chometz al natar, bishar bishirim alivra. So it's like an ornamental cloak, piece of clothing, biyom kara, on a cold day, chometz al natar, vinegar on netron, V'shar v'shirim, and someone who sings songs, alev ra, on a bad heart, or when they're in sorrow. So these are all things which are out of place. You don't wear, you don't get, a person gets dressed up for fashion in the cold, so they put fashion over the practical side of being dressed appropriately. Again, someone who sings when they're in sorrow, these types of things which are out of place, the wrong thing to do. So it seems from this that Rav Safra did something wrong. So Atal the Kameder of Yosef, Rav Safra goes to Rav Yosef, Amalei, Dilmu Yishum Te'avre Shmaitetot Demar, Akaryon Hochi. He says, maybe because I violated your memra, Rav Yosef, which is this idea of Makirei Kuhuna, that they can pass along this to a Talmud Chacham who's in need. So over here also, what happened was, you have Talmud Chachamim Rav and Rav Safra, and the Shameh, the butler, is giving the matnot to these Talmud Chachamim, which is the memra of Rav Yosef. So say, Amalei, Dilma Mishum Dabra Shmaita Demar, Akaryon Hochi, Amalei, Rav Yosef responds and says, Ki Amre Ano, Biacher. I'm only dealing with others. Shama bal korche mizake. He says it's only true where the kohen is willingly giving it over to the other individuals or to these talmidei chachamim. I didn't say it in the case of a butler who is going to be compelled to act, because he doesn't have his own free will. He's not doing things out of choice. He works for the Baal HaBayit. He's working for the people that he services. If they tell him to do it, then he's going to have to do it. In that case, Rav Yosef says, I did not say it, because there he's giving it, not because he wants to, but because he's compelled to. And that I don't consider to be a good idea. V'chi Amrei, and on top of that, Ana Laman Delo Efsharlei. That's for someone who they themselves can't do it. Ha Efsharlei. But if they themselves can handle these situations, then I would not say it. So what does that mean, that they could do it on themselves? That's over here, Rova. Rova wasn't an ani. He wasn't dachuk for money. Rova could have bought it himself. He could have purchased it himself. He had parnasa. It wasn't like he was desperate for parnasa, and then he took it from the kohen in order for parnasa. He wanted the delicacy. That's why he asked it for him. So that's, now, this becomes a criticism of Rova. Rav Safra says, I thought it was my problem. Rav Yosef says, listen, what I said was not true in this case. You have two problems in this case. Number one, you have a servant, a butler, who's compelled to act, and that's not where I said it. And number two is, you're talking with a Talmud Chacham who doesn't have a necessity. I said this about a Talmud Chacham in need, not someone who didn't have that necessity. So now it becomes an indictment of Rova. So, my time, so why did he get this pasuk? Why did Rav Yosef have this nevuah? Klape Rova! It was about Rova. So then we're going to ask the obvious question, L'kayin the Rava. Why did Rava see it in a dream? So my answer is Rava Nizuf Hava. Rava was somewhat in trouble up above. They were not so happy with Rava's behavior. So Rashi brings down two reasons for that. One is this case, because what he had done here. So that because of what he had done here, they weren't so happy with him. He was banished from above, and therefore he didn't get the chalom. Rather, Rav Safra, his partner, got the chalom. Then Rashi quotes the Gemara in Tanit, where Rava asks for rain in order to take care of the mother of Shmor Malka. It was a time that it shouldn't have been, and in a dream, his father appears to him and says, change your seat in the shul, because they're very unhappy with you up above, and then the next day his seat gets chopped up by daggers and everything like that, so his father saved him, but it's clear that Rava was not in good standing up above, and therefore that could be what the Nizuf Hava over here. Amalei Abai the Rav Dimi, Upashte Dekroba Maiktiv. What's the pasuk shot in that pasuk? Zamalei b'shomeh the talmid sheinu hagun. It's teaching a talmid that's not appropriate. You shouldn't teach talmidim that are not hagun. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav kol shenel talmid sheinu hagun nofel b'geinom. Anybody who teaches a talmid that is not ra'uy, that shouldn't be learning with him, and that's inappropriate for whatever reason. Shenemar kol choshech tamun litzpunav ta'achleyu esh lo nupach. Yira Sarid Be'olo. This is talking about someone who was successful, but in the end, all bad awaits him. It says, Kol Choshech, so total darkness, Tamun Litzpunav, awaits all of his treasures. Tachleu Eish Lo Nufach, a fire that is not even fanned, will come and eat him up, consume him. Yira Sarid Be'olo, anything, any remnant in his tent, meaning that his offspring, Yira, bad will happen to them. Vein Sarid Elo Tamar Chacham. And a sarid is a tamar chacham, which is shenemar basridim asher Hashem kore. Might be familiar. This is from Yoel's, what we quote on the Seder night, dam v'timrot Hashan. That pasuk is quoted from there. So that's this Yoel Gimel says basridim asher Hashem kore. The remnants that Hashem calls out to. Who does Hashem call out to? He calls out to the tamide chachamim. So that refers, sarid is a chachamim, yira sarid ba'olo. So that means that they will be bad. That happens to the Sarid Ba'olo, the Talmid Chacham in his tent, that's by a Talmid Chacham, She'enu Hagun. That's inappropriate. And you should not teach someone who is inappropriate. Amar Rabbi Zeira, Amar Rav, Kol Shonel, the Talmid She'enu Hagun, Kozorek, Even the Markulus. as if he throws a stone to Michael, as if he's worshiping Avodah Zarah. Shinemar, Kitzror Evan b'margima, like a stone. The modern word today, margima, here it's used as a sling, but today the modern word margima is for a mortar. A mortar is called a margima. The Kitzror Evan b'margima, like the stone that is put into a sling, Kain notain l'ksil kavod. That's what it's like when you give kavod to a fool. Kavod to a fool, here referring to someone who is inappropriate, someone that you should not give kavod to, and that means that you're teaching a talmid sheinu hagun, then it's kitzror evan b'margima. It's like shooting a rock out. Well, what's that rock? The rock is like a rock shot out that you throw to Marculus. Marculus was worshipped by throwing rocks at it, so that's what it's comparing it to. Now, you look over here on the side in the Masorah Tashas, the Gemara is missing a piece here, which is Vein kavod el Torah, and Torah kavod is Torah shenemar, kavod chachamim minchalu, utmimim minchalu tov. So that's how we know that the kavod here is referring to the chachamim. So the ksil, kavod, don't give to the fool kavod, don't make him into a talmud chacham. So Amar Rav Chama Rav Chanina kol said tova l'mi she'enu yodea, anybody does good to someone who doesn't know about it, ki'ilu zorei kev namakulus, it's as if he's throwing away good money. It's like he's like worshiping over his arash, shenemar. Again, quotes the same pasuk, Tzur Evin b'margima, kenotin l'ksil kavod. If you give something to someone, they're not aware of it, or they don't understand the good that you've done for them, that's like throwing a rocket of Avodah Zarah. And how do we know that? Uchtiv lo naveh l'ksil tanug. Yet it doesn't befit the ksil tanug. Benefits, pleasures, are something that the fool should not get. So, depending on which girsa you have here, you have the girsa of Nasara Deshatz, that's referring to this second clause, which is, if you do good to someone who doesn't understand that you're doing good for them, that's not appropriate. Lo naveh l'ksil tanug. It doesn't befit a fool to give him benefit or pleasure, which he's not going to enjoy or understand to enjoy, or doesn't know about. Whereas, if you read it the way our girsa is in our Gemara, the girsa in our Gemara is continuing. How do I know? Kitzur evin margima kintin l'ksil. Ksil is referring to the chachamim. Over here, don't give kavod to the ksil. Tiv lo naveh l'ksil tanug. The tanug here would be referring to teaching Torah. They'll give him the pleasure of learning Torah. The fool means someone who is inappropriate. Okay, now the Gemara goes back to our Mishnah, which is a Mishtatef imahem tzarech lirshom. If a person is a partner with a Kohen or a partner with Ovi Kochavim, and therefore he's patur from giving the matnot, he has to make a siman. He has to do something that indicates that that's the fact, that people understand why he is patur in this case. Gemara says, Vafilu ma'ovi kochavim. Even when you do with a non-Jew, you have to have some sort of indication. Viriminu. We have a question over here. Hamishtatef im Kohen tzarich lirshom. Someone who is a partner with the Kohen has to give some sort of indication, a siman of this. Hamishtatef im Oyev Kochavim upsulei Mekdashim ain't tzarich lirshom. But someone who, for whatever reason, has either psulei Mekdashim or is a partner with a non-Jew, ain't tzarich lirshom. Over there, you don't have to give indications of that. You do not have to put out those simanim in that case. Hachabai skinon. What's the case here? Diyoktiv ovi kochavim a maschato. That he's sitting in the stall where the butcher is selling the meat. He's sitting there alongside the butcher. So it's clear that he's the partner over here, and that's why you're patur. You don't need a siman, because it's obvious. Omar says, wait a minute, the kavata gabi ho kohen. What happens if you have a kohen? Diyoktiv a maschato. He's sitting in the stall along with him. So why would that make a difference? Meaning, if the goy is there, we say, it's clear that he's the pshutaf, because he's there with the butcher. Well, in the same scenario with the Kohen, we're saying that you do have to give a siman. What? The Kohen's sitting in the stall, why isn't it? My tzarech lirshom. It says, Amrei bisra kozobin. Because they're going to say that the Kohen's there to buy meat, not that he's a partner with the butcher. So, yachi obey kochavim nami. Why don't you say the same thing about the non-Jew? Amrei bisra kozobin. He's coming to buy meat. I would have said, what's the obvious answer? Is that no non-Jew would come to buy the expensive meat, kosher meat. I mean, that makes no sense for him to come and buy kosher meat when he can get much cheaper than velot or non-kosher meat. That Gemara doesn't answer. The non-Jew is running the till. He's running the cash register. So he's clearly trusting him, meaning that he's got to be a partner in the business, otherwise he wouldn't put him on the cash register. So the Gemara says, why is it by the Kohen when he's sitting by the cash register, when he's by the till? Why over there? Why is that any different? The Kohen's sitting there, it's obvious that he's a partner. Imre Hamone Hemne. So they say, no, that he trusts him. He put the Kohen there, he's the cashier. He made him, he's a worker, he's an employee of the butcher. He's not a partner here. The Ovi Kochavim Nami Amre Hamone Hemne. So say that about the non-Jew as well. The Ovi Kochavim, they also trust him. So this is inemuna b'ovid kochavim. So there is no, they are not trusted. Now, here from the Gemara, it sounds like a generic statement. Whereas if you look here in the Rashi, inemuna b'ovid kochavim, and you saw regilim lahamin b'ayam. That's not a normal business relationship. It's not a normal thing that they would trust someone who is outside of their inner circle to work the registers. You have someone that you trust, someone that you know, someone that you're familiar with. That's the person that you put on the registers. That's the person with the money. So it would be something that was right out of normal. I'm saying it would be true even amongst other groupings of people. Everybody always trusts their own in terms of working the register, working the money. You don't go to outsiders to work the cash register. Ibai Dema. This is very interesting. That the Stam Ovi Kachamim gets involved in the transaction. He tells him, no, don't sell to this person, sell for that, sell for the price. He gets involved in the business. He's not a silent partner, he's an active partner. So what about a Kohen? So why don't you say the same thing? The Kohen's there, he could be also directing traffic, saying things. So Rashi says, a Kohen Sanuahu. A Kohen is Sanua, and therefore he acts Bitzniut, and he would not. That's befitting. A Kohen is befitting that he acts bitzniut, and therefore the Kohanim would not get involved in that process. Even if he was a partner, he wouldn't become actively involved in the process. Very interesting, because we also have a din about the Kohanim, that they're hotheads. Meaning that the Kohanim are some, they don't sit still, they get angry. I mean, that's part of the zrizut of the Kohanim, is also this idea that they get a little hotheaded. There are examples of that throughout the Torah. So over here also, why do we say that he's tsanua, he stands back, he lets things go? It sounds almost uncharacteristic of the Kohen. That here the Gemara makes such a distinction between the activeness or the activity of the Ovid Kochamim as a partner versus the Kohen, who would be a more silent partner. Amar Mar, Upsule Mikdashim Ein Tzarachim Lershom. Psule Mikdashim are a korbanot that got a mum in them. It's a korban that Kedushat HaGuf got a mum in it, and you have to redeem it. You do not have to have a siman there. They're p'turim matanot. We saw that in the Mishnah in the beginning of the parak, that you don't have to give matanot from them. But nevertheless, ein tzarich l'shom. Alma mucha milta. There must be some other thing that makes it clear that they're p'sulei mekdashim. Why is that? We have a Mishnah that teaches us, we have this in Bechorot, p'sulei mekdashim ninkarim bitlis, v'nishkatim bitlis, v'nishkalim bitlitra. You can sell them in the shuk. They can be weighed in the shuk. They can be sold on the scale. They can be sold in such a manner that brings in the top price for them. So if that's the case, they're sold like any other piece of meat. They're sold like any other piece of meat. How are we going to distinguish? How are we going to know that this meat is psulim and gashim and they're peturim and a matanot? There's nothing here that designates them or indicates that it's separate. So Targuma Rav Adar Bar Ava Kamei Rav Papa, he says that this case of psulim and gashim, this bright as boton and mikarim betoch habayit. Only those items that are sold within the house. What do you mean sold within the house? Those are the psulim that are not allowed to be sold in the shuk. Those are the bechor and the maser. The distinction between bechor and maser and other psulim mukdashim, they both have the same problem. If they have a mum in them, they are not brought as korbanot, they're rather eaten. The bechor is eaten by the kohen, but as a bal mum, and the maser is bal mum, goes to the balim. The distinction between them, and the Mishnah, the Gemara discusses this in Bechorot, is that when it comes to psulim mukdashim, who does the money go to? You sell off psulim mukdashim, the money is then used to purchase a new korban. The money goes to Hekdesh. So it's for the benefit of Hekdesh. So we're willing to be mevazeh the Kodoshim and sell them in the Shuk in that process in order to benefit Kodesh. On the other hand, when it comes to a Bechor and Maser, who are the beneficiaries of the sale? The Bechor, it's the Kohen. By the Maser, it's the Balabayit. Over there, we're not willing to be mevazeh Kodoshim solely for the benefit of the individual. There is no benefit to Hekdesh over here. There's no benefit to Hekdesh. We're not going to be mevazeh the Kodoshim. So that's the distinction between them, and therefore Rav Adar Bar Ava says that that's our bright over here that says Psulei Mekdashim, you don't need a siman. That's why Bechor Maser, they're sold out of the house. Bechor Maser sold out of the house, it's clear that you're getting a lower, you're fetching a lower price for it, and the reason you're doing this is because they are Psulei Mekdashim. They are Bechor Maser that have a mum in them. Amar Avuna, Shutaf Berosh Potur Men Alechi. If the coin is a Shutaf, or the Ovid Kachamim is a Shutaf in the head, it's Potur Men Alechi. He doesn't have to give the cheeks. Of the three matnot kuna that come out of the animal, he doesn't have to give the cheeks. Shutaf biyad, if there's a shutaf in the foreleg, then patur min hazra'ah. Then you don't have to give the zra'ah. Shutaf b'bnei me'ayin, if he's a partner in the innards, the intestines, patur min hakeba, he doesn't have to give the keba. So here he says, basically, the point that he's making over here, Rav Huna, is that each one of these three matnot kuna stands independently. It's not they're a package. If you're patur from one, you're patur from the others. No, each one stands independently. If you're patur from one, the other two, you're still chayabin. But now we have Chir Barav Amar, Chir Barav, who also, it's interesting, Rav Huna and Chir Barav both learned by Rav. They were peers in terms of, but their Rebbe was Rav. I mean, Chir Barav, his father was Rav, but Rav Huna also. Amrei, afilu shutaf ba'achat mehen patur mikulan. Even if he's a shutaf in one of them, then he's patur me all. What is he saying? Chir Barav is saying that it's a package deal. Zerua lechayim and kebab come as a package. You're patur from one, you're patur from all. That the, I want to keep the coin, says, I'm keeping the head, and everything else is yours. Or he says, I'm going to keep 1/100th of the rosh. Patur. Then he's patur. I'm going to keep the foreleg, and everything else is yours. Even if he's keeping 1/100th of the foreleg, patur. Again, the same thing. The coin says, I'm going to keep the innards, the intestines. The rest is yours. Even if he keeps 1/100th of that part, patur. My love, patur min alechi v'chayav b'kulan. It sounds like in each one of them, patur for that individual item. And your chayav in the remainder. Patur min azra v'chayav b'kulan. Patur min akebav v'chayav b'kulan. I says, no, you can just read it. Patur min kulan. Mar says, galitnei patur min kulan. Then just write that. That would be a lot clearer. Just say patur min kulan. So va'ot. And then we have an explicit right to Tanya. Rosh shali v'kula shalcha. I'm keeping the head. You get the rest of the animal. Afilu echad mi me'am b'rosh. Even if he keeps 1/100th of the rosh. Patur min alechi v'chaya b'kulan. Here it's explicit. Patur min alechi v'chaya b'kulan. That sounds like Rav Huna. Not like Chiyar Barav. Yufta to Chiyar Barav to Yufta. This is a very strong question against Chiyar Barav. I'm Rav Chista. Ha matnita atite le Chiyar Barav. Chiyar Barav was thrown off by this brayta. This braita is what makes Chiyar Barav assume that the matnot kuhuna, the Zerah Lechayim Kibar, is a single unit and not multiple items. Titania, esrim barba matnot kuhuna. There are 24 matnot kuhuna heim, v'kulan nitnu l'aron u'banav. They're given to Aaron of b'klal u'prat u'bebrit melach. They're given, the way that they're given is b'klal u'prat and then b'brit melach. Klal u'prat means mina Torah. That's learned from Vayikach Korach, where the matnot kuhuna are mentioned. Over there it says, the Chol Kachay B'nei Yisrael, the Chad Netatim, you get all of the Kodashim, and then it goes out and lists all of the Kodashim. So you have a cloud there, and then you have the Pratot that are afterwards, and Brit Melach, which is, by the end of the parsha, it says, Brit Melach Olam Hi, that Brit Melach, just like Melach, the salt lasts forever, so too this covenant between Hashem and the Kohanim is forever, that they're entitled to these Matnot Kuhuna. Kol HaMekayim, anybody who keeps the Matnot Kuhuna does it properly, Kiyilu Kayim B'chlal Oprat, or Brit Melach. As if he keeps, Rashi says, means as if he kept the Kol HaTorah Kula, and Ubrit Melach, and he's upholding the covenant of this salt. Anybody just violates and doesn't give the Matnot Kuhuna, Kilo Vera, but Klal Uprat, as if he violates the Torah, Ubrit Melach, and this covenant of the salt. Here's the list. Eser by Mikdash, there are 10 in the Mikdash. Mikdash means they have to be eaten within the walls of the Azara. Arba Bishalayim, they have to be eaten within the walls of Bishalayim. Eser by Gvulim, and 10 out of the Gvulim. So here they are. Eser by Mikdash. The 10 in Mikdash are, they're entitled to the Chatat Of, the Asham Vadai, Asham Talui, Zivchei Shalmei Tzibor, which are the Shlamim that are brought on Atzeret, that are brought on Shavuot. They have a din, they have a like or similar to a Asham. The Log Shemen Shal Mitzorah, the leftover Shemen of the Log of the Mitzorah. Shtei Alechem that are brought along with the Kibsei Atzeret. Lechem Apanim. Two. Those are two separate. So everyone that listed here so far is separate. Shtei Lechem is 7. Lechem Panim is 8. And then Sharei Menachot. So that's it. Lechem Panim is 8. Sharei Menachot. The leftovers of Menachot after the Kmitza is taken off of them, the remainder of the Menachot belong to them. Umincha Omer. Even though Mincha Omer is the same as a regular Mincha, that when the Komet's taken off, they get the remainder. It's only Mincha Betzibur that is Nechal. And therefore it's listed separately. So here you have the 10 that are in the Mikdash where the Kohanim have to partake of them, eat them within the Mikdash. Arba b'Yerushalayim. 4 that are in Yerushalayim are Habichora. That's the Korban. If they're given the Bechor and they bring it in as a Korban in Mikdash, then they get to eat that within Yerushalayim, the confines of the walls of Yerushalayim. Bikurim, that are brought up after the ceremony of the Bikurim, Mikra Bikurim is done, it's given to the Kohanim to eat within Yerushalayim. Moram min Atodah me'el Nazir. That's one. That's a single one, which is anything that's removed from the Todah. The Todah is the Chazeh and the Shok and the Arba Chalot. And the Me'il HaNazir is the Zerah B'Sheila and the two Chalot that they get from the Me'il HaNazir. They're counted as one because they're a similar type of gift that's given to the Kohanim. They're given parts of similar parts. They have Lechem involved. They have Tnufa involved. So therefore, it's very similar in nature. Therefore, they're counted as one here. And Ve'orot Kodoshim. The skins of the Kodoshim, which Tosfot takes a little issue with that. He says, "Alo bazara hey mafshitin." You have to strip. They have to skin, flay the animals in the azara to give them the orot. Tosfot says, "I don't know why they called that in Yerushalayim, because they really couldn't take them out of the azara until they were flayed. So it should have been in the Eser Mikdash." Tosfot leaves it as a tzarachion that should have been with Eser b'Mikdash or 11 b'Mikdash and 4 b'Yerushalayim. Once they were flayed, but if you're going to say any limitation, it should be where they're flayed, which is in the azara. The Eser b'Gvulin, the 10 in the Gvulin, which are Truma. Trumat Maser is number 2, Challah is number 3, Reshit HaGeiz, which is going to be upcoming perek, about the first of these shearings, Matnot, this is our perek, Zruel Chaim and Keba, Pidgin Aben, the five sela of Pidgin Aben, Pidgin Petar Chamor, that you give a set for the Chamor, Steach Huza, that is a field that is in your possession, it's inheritance from your forefathers, if you're Makdish it, and someone else redeems it. You don't redeem it before the Yovel, then on the Yovel, it goes out to the Kohanim of the Mishmar during the Yovel, if someone else redeemed it, and it's then given back in the Yovel. Stei Charamim is a sadeh that's directed towards the Kohanim. It's Mugdash to the Kohanim. Or there's a machlokas about how Charam works, whether it's for Kodesh or whether it's for the Kohanim. But either way, it'll end up with the Kohanim. The Gezel Ager. And the Gezel Ager, which we've discussed before, is the Karen and the Chomesh. If a person takes a Shvuah, what deals with Mamon, denying Mamon to a Ger, and then the Ger dies and he wants to do Tshuva, he has to bring an Asham for the Gzelot, but then he also has to bring back the Karen and the Chomesh. Problem is that when anybody else, you can give it to his Yorshim. The Ger here has no Yorshim, and therefore you can't give it to him. So who Savar? Here in the enumeration of the 10 that's in the list of the Eser Begulim, it counts Matnot as 1. If you're right, Ravuna, it should have counted them as 3 separate Matanot, because they're independent. The fact that it counts them as 1, that's what led Bechir Barav to believe that they were 1. Chadaninu, Velohi. They put them together as one because they come together as a package? No! Anything that's very similar in nature, they combine into a single entity. Given the Dami Lohododi, since here the Matnot, meaning the Zerua, the Chaim, and Kibar are all very similar, they count it as one. It's not that they're the same entity, they're the same Matana, but because they have the same characteristic, they're almost identical, therefore they are counted as one. Ibailuhu. Harosh shelcha, v'kula shali. It says, the rosh belongs to you, and the remainder is for me. Mahu. Bater chiyuva azlinan. So now, harosh shelcha, this is the opposite of the cases we had till now, which is harosh shelcha. You get to keep the head, Yisroel. You take the head, and I'll keep the rest of the behema. That's what the Kohen says. So now, mahu, what's the din? Bater chiyuva azlinan. Do we have to the chiyuva? V'chiyuva gabe Yisroel hu. And the Yisroel is the one who has the head now. He's the one who has the head, so he'll have to give it to the chayim, because it's in his possession. Or do we have to go after the actual behema? The majority of the behema is held by a kohen, and he has the ikar part of the behema. The ikar behema into the kohen, who, and therefore he's patur the matnot. What is the case over here? Now, in terms of our mishnah, what's different between this case and the case of our mishnah? So Tosfos points out, what about our mishnah? It's on chutz mina matanot, patur mina matanot. If the kohen says, look, I'm selling you everything besides the matanot, then Yisrael is patur from the matanot. Our mishnah, the matanot remain with the kohen, and that's why he never becomes chayav. Over here, the matanot are coming to the Yisrael. So tashma, they gave over their son to Yisrael to shear it. Patur alokeach. So even though he's doing the shearing, and even though it's in his possession, he bought the shearings from them, it's their animal that he's shearing. So therefore, it's their value that he's buying from them, and therefore it's considered theirs. Geiz tzono shalovei chachamim patur, mereshit geiz. And the geiz tzono, if a ovei chachamim shears his sheep, and you purchase that from him, you're patur mereshit the geiz. Because again, the ikar behema is what determines over here, it's their animal, they're selling the shearings of their animals. So now that doesn't become your shearings, and now you have to give, all of a sudden you have to give Reshit HaGeiz. No, you purchased it from them, but you purchased it like what they would have to do. They won't have to give Reshit HaGeiz, so you don't have to give. They sold you the rights that they had in that geiz. The rights they have in that geiz is there's no matanot kuna here. Well, what does the Brayta say? The Tosefta says, that's the difference between Reshit HaGeiz and Zerua L'Chaim and Keiva. That by Reshit HaGeiz, you're patur. That means by Zerua L'Chaim and Keiva, you would not be patur. Not be patur means if you buy the head, you gotta give the L'Chaim. You buy the Zerua, you gotta give it as the Matnot Kiuna. You become Chayav if you own the piece that belongs to the Kohen.
Kohen had this animal, he kept it, now he sells it. Kohen can't sell his Zerua L'Chaim and Keiva to Yisroel.
No, he's not doing that. He's doing it before he chefs it. He sells him the head. He says, look, I'm keeping the animal, I'm giving you the head.
Right.
So that's before Shkita.
Is he selling it to it, or is it that they are partners in it?
He becomes a partner by buying the head. The question is, how does that partnership work now? Since he owns that particular Aver where the Matana is, now does he become Chayav? That's the Gemara's question. It's exactly the Gemara's question. They technically are partners here, but they know exactly what part they're going to get. So here, the coin's getting the Ikar Behema, he's getting the head. Gemara's answer is, you know, who's Chayav?
The question I get is, are they really partners? They're selling him
a shearing. But Rashi says something along your lines. He says, Avilu kol mishnik dezu patur, v'zeh chomer, dalokeach matnot min ha-kohen, is chayim, kodem shchita. Kohen doesn't have a right to the matanot before the shechita. He's not entitled to it. When he's selling you the head, he's selling you a head, but the matanot are embedded there and he had no right to it yet. Whereas by the gaze is right there. So he already has a right to the rich of the gaze. That's what creates the chi of a matanot, and at that point it's ready with the Yisrael. So it's along the lines of what you're suggesting there.
Good,
it's still gaze. It's still gaze. Right. It's still gaze. It already has a shame gaze to it that it can call it Reshit the gaze. That's what seems to be the distinction that Rashi is making over here. Alright, so stop here.